Hi, and welcome to Marriage Conversation. This is the monthly show that happens here the first Thursday of each month here on WTBQ with the esteemed Dr. Stephen Frew. We talk about your marriage, your family, and why marriage is so important. We answer your questions, we talk about the issues, and as everyone knows who's married, there are some issues in being married. Dr. Stephen Frew is a coach, a therapist, and an author. He has written a few books on marriage, including With These Rings, terrific book, and From Marginal to Magnificent, which speaks about just that, from marginal to magnificent marriages and how you can make yours better. Dr. Stephen Frew joins us, as I said, the first Thursday. Well, this is his show. We join him the first Thursday of each month from 12 to 1. And if anybody wants to go to his website, it's www.marriageconversation.com. And don't forget, you can always join us and you can always join him. Send him a question, go to his website, order his books, and listen to us today because we will be here until 1 o'clock talking about your marriage. And, you know, this is Valentine's Day month. So this is the time to really think of your life, your wedding, your honey, your family, the things you have built, those Valentines in your life. And we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about families because, you know, as Dr. Frew has written, from marginal to magnificent, a lot of marriages go through many marginal things. But staying together for the children is maybe one of the things that many of us do. And we're going to talk about what Valentine's Day has to do with parenting. And we'll take a look at a new way to think about loving your children, not necessarily tough love, and it's not helicopter love. And Dr. Frew, I want to welcome you to your show, and I also would love you to explain the difference between tough love and helicopter love.
Oh, that, you know, I don't know who created that phrase. I love the phrase because a lot of us old-fashioned kind of men and women have been raised with, you know, I walked 30 miles in the snow uphill on blizzards conditions to get to school, and I didn't have shoes on my feet kind of stuff.
Right.
And so if you hang out in certain circles, you'll hear adults talking about the toughness of their lives and what they've done, a lot of maybe for want of a better term, we could call them yuppie parents. A lot of parents who then have made a different life for themselves than their parents had, wanted their children to have, I don't want my children to go through what I went through.
Mm.
I don't want my children to this and that. And so they've made the mistake of, for example, children don't have to do chores, you know, and we'll have a housekeeper do those. And children don't have to ever work for anything because we can afford it and we buy it. If they want a new iPhone, give it to them. If they want an iPad, give it to them. If they want an iPod, give it to them. And so on and so forth. There's a lot of, and we all know this isn't new information, we all know that there's a lot of indulgence with this kind of baby boomer generation of children we've raised.
But is that bad?
Now, well, you know, I wouldn't say bad and I wouldn't say good. I would say maybe not so conscious. Because what it means is that there has been a kind of lack of information for a lot of parents on what developmental psychology is about, what children need and what they don't need, what's different between a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. We live in an age where parents allowing children to watch movies that really are inappropriate for their age, but they reference back to the suppression of their parents, and they don't want to suppress their children, and so the children gets to watch, an 8-year-old will get to watch a very violent movie, which is she has no business watching, for example,
right,
or a movie with a lot of sexual content or something. So we lack information about the clear developmental stages that children are living in, and therefore we lack respect for that. Now, that's one thing. Now, helicopter pilot comes in, helicopter parents come in with the parent who wants their so badly for their child to do well and not suffer the way they suffered that they will give them praise even when they don't deserve it.
You know, let me just ask you a quick question. Is it because they don't want them to suffer? Is it because they wear their children as their accomplishment, their badge? You know, that's often what I see is, look what I've accomplished. You know, there might be out of the work world a mother, or also in the work world, but her biggest accomplishment and her biggest, you know, effort is to the child. So that child has to be all these things. They're super this, they're wonderful that, they're the best at school, they're the best in the sports, you know, and they're going places. And this is their way of patting themselves on the back, maybe?
Well, I think it's not an either or. I think it's also that, sure. I think that living through your children is a real mistake. But if you haven't lived your own life, which connects into this question you raised at the beginning of the show, which is that parents who want to get out of their marriage or are sick of their marriage, if you haven't lived your own life, then you'll tend to live your life through your child. And that's a very, very dangerous, seductive, slippery slope, because your child does not want you to live your life through her or him. Your child needs to respect you and needs to see you living your own life and living it consciously and full-heartedly, and really support them living their own life. That might mean that my daughter, who's 14 this coming month and who's going to Africa next summer, and she's saving money. She's going to work with monkeys down there that are abandoned, and there's an organization that does that, and she's been accepted. So she'll be gone about 6 weeks next summer to Africa. Now, that costs about $3,500 total. Now, she decided this last summer, and so she made a program for herself and has it on her bathroom mirror about how much money she has to earn and save every week to get to her half of that. We're paying half, she's paying half. Mm-hmm. Now, the helicopter pilot parent, what they do is she says, like she said to me 3 weeks ago, you know, Papa, I haven't done, she shreds papers. She has a shredder and shreds papers and charges for it. That's one of the ways she makes money for friends and people that we know. So she said, I haven't done any shredding for several weeks, and I'm behind. Now, the helicopter parent says, oh, don't worry, honey. That's my, this is what I want to do. Right. I want to say, oh, don't worry about it. Here's $100.
Exactly.
And the conscious parent says, wow, that's got to be tough. What are you going to do about it? Boy, I'm with you. Do you need me to come with you to pick up that two boxes of stuff you have to shred? Yeah, I do. I need you to help me out with that. Okay, I can help you out with that. But I'm not going to save you from yourself or from your plan. I'm going to support you as you work hard to develop your own plan and see it to completion. Because what I want next June is for her to have her $1,800. I want for her to have earned it and saved it from her allowance. I want her to have done it, and she can stand proud when she gets on that plane with a couple of other people and their parents. When she gets on that plane, I want her to say, I did this. I earned it. Mm-hmm. So if you're a helicopter parent, what you're doing is always kind of smothering them and making choices for them and keeping them from suffering and so on. And there's a lot of evidence that says it just goes in the wrong direction. It also goes in the direction of teaching to the test, by the way, just to make a little political statement here. The parents who are so worried about their child getting math in the first grade and getting into the right school, it goes in the complete wrong direction. It doesn't honor the developmental phase of where the child is.
Yeah, I mean, that's so easy to do as a parent, especially if you are in a marriage that is marginal. You know, your marriage might not be giving you as much back, but you're there for the child. So you want to be, I see this a lot, and you probably, or maybe you do, or maybe you don't, I don't know. But I see this with friends that often seem to compete with their spouse of, I'm going to be the better parent than you, because they're mad at their spouse and they want to win. Yeah. They want that child to like them more. And well, dad might not do this, but I will. That's a marriage problem more than a parenting problem, isn't it?
Well, yes. And you know, that links up to this thing that's talked about a lot these days, and there's books written. If people in the audience want to read about this, they can just email me at askstephenfrew.com, and I'll send them the titles. That has to do with the giving of praise where praise isn't really merited, where everybody win, lose, or draw gets a trophy, for example. And you know, where you say, oh, what a great picture, what a great this, what a great that, you're really more talking to yourself than to your child. Children aren't stupid, and undue praise confuses them. Praise that is conservatively and artfully given is a wonderful thing. But just praise about everything, what a wonderful bowel movement, is stupid. It goes in the direction of stupid, and it dumbs the children down. They don't know then the difference between their true effort and their and what the parents' anxiety is doing.
But you realize you're speaking to a whole generation of children that were given ribbons and awards for not completing or not doing, but just showing up. So, I mean, there's been much written about that and much talked about that, that, you know, I was praised, but really, what was I praised for? You know, I mean, you know, what did I really accomplish? I mean, is that a parent's fault or is that a societal fault?
Well, I think it's all together.
Yeah.
I think we are the society and the
That's
society
true.
Is us. I met a young man who's 25 or 6, maybe high school graduate, who was complaining to me, just this is very recent, and complaining to me that the job he applied for only paid, it's his first really real job, and they wanted to start him at $30 an hour, and he was insulted. And I said to him, what did you do to qualify for a $30 an hour job?
Really?
Are you a computer programmer? Are you some great skill? No, I don't have any skills. They're going to train me. So $30 an hour seemed to me like a very generous offer.
Absolutely.
And so I think there is that kind of entitlement. I did some consulting last year with a school system out here, and the 8 teachers kind of uniformly told me their biggest challenge was that in the third grade was the tremendous sense of entitlement these children brought to the classroom. So I think helicopter parenting is responsible for that, and I think you're right. It has to do with the anxiety of the parents. And so rather than just kind of point it out and criticize it, I think parents, you need to learn a new way to love your children.
Uh-huh.
And that means that you need to let your own past and woundedness go, and you need to do some reading and do some talking to people who are in this area and get your glasses on straight so you can see that your children are already on their pathway and they have good stuff in them, but that you don't have to be this indulgent, overpraising, you know, kind of person that really is confusing to them.
Many of us had children, not when we were 20, but when we were 35 and 40. I mean, it's a generation that had children later. And so by the time they have these children, they're so enamored with them and feel that, I think an older parent is often more doting of a parent and certainly more a nervous parent. And I have seen this over and over again where everything is, they're so fearful of letting this child know anything that's toxic or anything that's wrong because they want to protect them and keep them in this perfect world. And I don't often think it's both spouses. Again, it is one spouse over the other. So what you're saying is to let go of your own wounds and let your child live their life without them, because so many do come to this with so many wounds of their own. But how do you let them go and not visit them on the child, even in a way to protect them? I mean, they're doing just the opposite of what they thought they want to do. I mean, they protect them so much that these children are never going to be wounded in the same way.
Well, you know, this is kind of a big idea.
Mm.
But for some people listening, I would say, look, pay attention to your marriage. Pay attention to what you're not getting and what you're not giving. And start to create a partnership with your wife or your husband that says, look, let's talk about how the two of us live together. A lot of this stuff that gets put on children is simply a short circuit.
It is.
Because I'm not maybe feeling very intimate with my wife, I want to feel intimate with my 13-year-old. I'm not talking inappropriate.
Right, right.
But I'm saying I want to feel close to her. I want her praise. I want her to tell me what a good dad I am. And some of that, I know this is a hard thing for a lot of people to hear, but some of that is that I need to wake up and say, you know what, to my wife, honey, I don't feel very close to you lately,
and
I'd like to do some work on that. I'd like to talk about it. So we take some of the spotlight off the children. and put it back where it belongs on working on our marriage. Because if the marriage is thriving, the children will thrive.
Mm-hmm.
If the marriage isn't thriving, the children have a hard row to hoe.
Yeah.
They just do. They may be getting too much or too little, but they're not getting natural, healthy, muscular, spiritually vital parenting from their parents where they deserve to be getting it.
Well, you say that healthy marriages make the world a safer place for children. And, I mean, that is such a strong statement, and I think we all know it, but so many people get caught up in their own anger, their anger at their spouse, and, well, you know, you'll survive, if I'm not happy with him or her, then we will break up and you will survive. I mean, people say it all the time, people do it, you know, there's always this thing, well, you know, this marriage isn't really that good, my children will be fine, it's not that big of a deal, my husband and I are just disagree a lot, it's better for the kids if we break up, but it's really not better for the kids if you break up, right?
Most of the time, it's probably not. I mean, there are probably some pretty dysfunctional marriages where it is better.
Right, right.
But what you have, I think, this piece of the conversation, what people have to realize is when you get married, you actually form a community. It's a micro community, you might say.
Right.
But you and your husband and me and my wife, we have formed a community, and that community attaches to other micro communities, other families, and we attach to each other, and pretty soon we have what we call a village or a town or a city, and then a state, and then a country, and then the world. So if the smallest elements of the community, and those of you who are single out there who are listening, don't think I'm putting down single parents. I'm not. Don't think I'm putting down single people. I'm not putting down single people, single parents, gays or lesbians or anything else. I'm not. I'm just talking about marriage. And marriage is in trouble. It has been in trouble for some time, and it needs a lot of attention. So if the marriages, those kinds of nuclear families, if they attend to what's going on and they get healthier, they automatically make the communities that they're attached to healthier. If the communities that they're attached to are getting healthier and are thriving, the children live in a world that is much safer and healthier than if everything is falling apart.
Yeah.
And as you say, there's anger and there's bitterness and there's abandonment and there's, I'm not going to do this. I mean, we all know many stories, I don't have to tell them,
right,
of marriage breakups that have been just awful for children. And the children have survived because they're tough and they love and they'll survive.
Sure.
But that doesn't mean they've had the best possible shot at being the healthy adults we want them to be, and they are our future.
I agree with that, though I will say the other side that I hear often, and many listeners are probably thinking the same thing, that I'm teaching my child to stay when you're unhappy, if you stay. I'm teaching my children, I recently heard this from a friend of mine going through a divorce, well, if I stayed, I was teaching my children to stay when you're miserable, and I want to show them that you have a right to take care of yourself first, and they'll see me do. So I'm I'm showing them a way to take care of yourself as a woman, as a person first, and that everything else is second, and that is healthy and that is good by getting out of a marriage. How do you say to someone, look, if you're miserable, staying is good for the kids?
No. Say that if you're miserable, how about doing everything you can to change the game? Now, you could say, I have people I coach all the time who say, you know, I'm miserable in this job, but I really like it. It's close to my home. Da-da-da-da-da. I said, well, have you thought about trying to influence your job? Have you thought about getting some competencies that can change the misery quotient? You know, a lot of misery is self-imposed. So I can come home and I can say hi to my wife and walk down the hall, and I can have my fantasy that's based on 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years of living. I can say, well, you know what? She's cold. I mean, she didn't even answer. Or, you know what? She doesn't care about me. She didn't ask how my day went. I can start talking to myself in a way that actually produces my misery. And then I can meet you for coffee the next day and say, you know, I'm just not making it in this marriage. I'm married to a cold woman. And you say, oh, Stephen, you're so sensitive and warm and lovely. And I say, yeah, Shannon, wow, I'm sensitive and warm and lovely. But you know what? My marriage isn't working. Well, maybe my marriage would work with you. And I can confuse myself and go down a road that is self-reinforcing but really doesn't help me get clear.
Yeah.
So I would say to a person who says that they're miserable, look, first order of business, you got children, that was a deal you made. Your egg and your sperm got together, made a child, you made a deal. So let's see what we can do with that deal before you have an exit strategy. Because you can be pretty sure if you have an exit strategy that what you're teaching your children is when tough times come in your job or in your love or with your health, the best thing to do is exit.
Mm-hmm.
And I say the best thing to do is embrace the challenge and do your very, very best to see what you can do with that challenge.
Yeah, very interesting. I recently read a book or heard a woman on an interview somewhere who wrote a book about marriage, and she said the most interesting thing she found when she interviewed hundreds and hundreds of couples is most had an exit strategy. And most
yes.
women said to her, oh, you know, I've already planned and I'm going to leave and, you know, everybody seemed to have, and she was shocked at that. She said, I was shocked at how so many people had this exit strategy to leave their marriage as opposed to working on it. Why is that? I mean, look, times change. I'm not going to say, you know, 50 years ago was so much better because I don't think it was. But people didn't have as many options. Maybe we didn't see so many people splitting up so quickly for whatever reason. I mean, we see this with celebrities and we think we have a right to continually be happy, that life is a constant beer commercial chasing the new fun thing. And this is great life and fun. And that the minute we're miserable, we just need to throw away anybody that makes us miserable, regardless of what happens. But clearly, that is not how a family and a unit function. But how do we learn to take that marginal marriage and make it good enough to stay in and create a better unit?
I talked to a family the other day, and the father said this, believe it or not, he actually said this. His 12-year-old daughter lost her iPhone. Now, what's that, a $600, $700 item?
Mm.
And they didn't have insurance.
Not quite, but all right, yeah.
And so he was rubbing his hands together and sweating and thinking, I've got to come up with another $600, $700. I mean, you know, and I'm saying, wait. She's 12. Is she 12? Did I understand you right? Yeah, she's 12. And what are you sweating about?
Really?
What, she's got to have an iPhone? I mean, she could get a phone for $50 that mm-hmm. would do the safety thing.
Right.
That would give her an umbilical cord to the home. So if you think that way, if you think that you can lose something and there's no consequence, then your children are raised with that same kind of disposable mentality. And then in a subtle way, relationships also get disposable.
Mm.
And so you say, well, you know, well, I'm through. She just doesn't do it for me anymore. And I say, yeah, so? What do you mean she doesn't do it for you anymore? Did you marry a prostitute? Is that what you married? No, I didn't marry a prostitute. Okay, then what do you mean she doesn't do it for you anymore? Or what do you mean you're not interested in him anymore? That's about you, not about him. That's about, it's about each of us. If we turn that around and I say, boy, I'm not very good at being intimate, and therefore I feel a lot of coldness in my house, I can get my hands around working on that. But if I say she's cold, she's cold, she's cold, I can't get my hands around working out that. All I want to do is leave.
Mm. It sounds like you're saying that by reinforcing to that child that you lost that iPhone and I'll go and find a way to get one and spend all this money to get you something that clearly at 12 years old you don't need and is a little bit spoiled. But by doing that, what you're saying is that you can just get what you want instantly when you want it. And the minute you're not happy, then you can throw away that person and just go get what you want, because instant gratification is much more important than working on it. And that's what we're teaching our children?
I think that's connected, yes.
Yes. Okay.
And I think what we don't do is say, wow, I guess you're going to, I mean, even if you are a family that believes that 12-year-olds should have iPhones, that's
mm-hmm.
I'm not a moralist, that's your business. But then I would say, well, I guess how are you going to replace it? What are you going to do? What's your plan? What do you think, honey? because once you start relating to her as a responsible person and putting it all on her, she gets a chance to problem solve. She gets a chance to work out her muscles. She gets a chance to go to the psychological gym and start to think, gee, I got to raise $600. It's going to take me a while. I get $5 a week allowance. I can do this chore. Maybe I can, you know, but whatever. And she'll start creating a pathway. Children will. And once they do, when she gets the next iPhone in, you know, July, that iPhone will be very precious to her because she problem solved it and took care of it.
Oh, absolutely.
But if you purchase it 2 days later and put it on your credit card, you haven't taught her anything.
No. And that is our job, to teach them things.
That's our job. I used to do a lot of consulting and work with adult single people, and I used to tell the men, say, you know, when a woman comes up to you and you're single and you're 35 or 40, and she starts telling you what a loser her ex-husband Bill was, and how he never did this, and he always did this, and he drank too much, and he da-da-da. You know what I learned when I was single? I learned to say, you know what? I got to tell you something. What's that, Stephen? I'm just like Bill. Bill is my brother. We're a lot more alike than we're unlike. So I want you to know that if you think dating me, you're getting a better guy than Bill, you're probably not. And they would say, what? You would tell a woman that? Say, yeah, I don't want to start out being superior to Bill.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm going to be jumping through the hoops to try to show her how bad Bill is and how good I am. And then one day I'm going to meet Bill. And I'm going to say, gee, Bill doesn't seem like a bad guy to me.
No.
He seems like a pretty nice guy. He brushes his teeth. He has a job. What's so bad about Bill?
Yeah.
Well, I bought into something with her if I did that.
Sure.
And I don't want to buy into it. I want to say, you know, Bill, men are men and women are women. And I know there's differences. But, you know, if you're going to relate to me not as a superior replacement for Bill, but as a real human being who has my own challenges in my life and my own shortcomings, and, you know, and see if we can love each other.
Wow. Well said. I'm not sure you might get a second date, but maybe, hopefully she's she's smarter than I think she is. We have to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about how loving each other through loving your children is a great way to celebrate Valentine's Day. You are listening to Marriage Conversation here on WTBQ, and we will be back in just a few.